This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The rainy weather continues across the Cincinnati region this week, pouring outside now. The WVXU news team is covering it from all angles, from flooded basements to damaged roads. And on Cincinnati Edition today, it's our monthly gardening show with a panel of experts who will discuss what farmers and gardeners are doing to cope with this ceaseless deluge. We want to hear from you, too, whether you're struggling to keep up your planting schedule or what other general questions you might have about gardening and farming this time of year, as always. So joining Cincinnati Edition today are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles. Welcome, Sarah.
Hey.
Turner Farm Community Garden Manager Joshua Jones. Welcome, Joshua.
Hello.
And we may at some point be joined by our good friend from the Boone County Cooperative Extension, Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. We think that he may have some trouble getting here today. And if it's the rain, and if you're listening, David, just drive safely, and we'll see you when we see you. So right now, we've got Sarah and Joshua, and what a mess.
Yeah, he's waterlogged wherever he's at.
It's a mess outside. I mean, it was just pouring moments ago. It may not be at this precise moment, but boy, you just look out there and you think, my goodness, is this ever going to end? And so if April showers bring May flowers, what do June showers bring?
Headaches.
Yeah. And weeds.
Yeah, and weeds.
Yeah. And lack of sun.
So what kind of problems are we facing because of this heavy downpour that we've been dealing with for so many consecutive days?
Well, waterlogged roots, mainly, and you can, I notice my plants, they look reasonably healthy, but they're not doing anything, which I would have been concerned about a few years ago, because I'm watching them day by day, and they're not growing, they're just kind of holding their place. They look reasonably healthy, but they're just in a holding pattern. So I'm just going to wait it out. That's really all we can do, is just wait for the weather to dry out.
We want to hear from you out there as well. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. I imagine that farmers and small gardeners are facing different difficulties because of what's going on. Let's start with the people out in the more rural areas of the region, those who have working professional farms. What are they dealing with because of all this wetness?
Well, thinking about farm animals, too, so having to keep the safety of those farm animals. And if you need help or recommendations with that, make sure you reach out to the Cooperative Extension Office. We have some resources for that. But also, if you're on the low bottoms of your county, you just have to be mindful of any flooding, because there are some precautions that you have to be aware of. So just be mindful of that. You don't want to harvest like your leafy greens, especially, or your root crop vegetables, if they've been flooded. So,
well, what might be the problem with the farm animals?
Well, with flooding comes movement of animals. Joshua, so
they get swept up in the water.
And water is a great vector for disease, funguses, bacteria. So everything just is a little bit more exacerbated now. And it's brought to life a little bit at a higher rate with all this rain and wetness.
Are there any crops that are particularly susceptible to this kind of rain?
Corn is, corn does not like to be super wet. It has the aerial roots to try to get oxygen, but corn in standing water can die within 24 hours. And with these large farms, they don't farm on contoured beds the way that small gardeners do. So they can't raise their beds up the way that small gardeners do. So they're definitely dealing with flooded fields, and it has a huge reduction in overall yield. And you know, a 10% loss for yield for farmers is a huge deal.
Yeah, and just thinking about the future, and so we have all this rain, and as Joshua mentioned, like lack of sunlight, therefore just immature plants. So tomato plants, just they're green, but they're not at their height that they should be. They're not flowering. And then knowing Kentucky weather, we're going to hit humidity fairly quickly, the turnaround, and so therefore diseases. So we had to be mindful of that. And rain can wash up some really good sediment and some good soil nutrients, but we also have to think of, you know, lack of fertilizer actually could be another detrimental too. We start seeing some yellowing at this time of year because with all the rain, it's just leaching out all of the nitrogen. So,
and you can't feed them in the rain either.
Right.
It just washes it right away.
Yeah, be mindful of that.
Okay, so those are the big farms. What about the little guys who have backyard gardens or front yard gardens? What are we dealing with now?
Well, I always recommend all of my gardeners to use either wooden raised beds or what we call permanent raised beds, which are essentially mounds. And what that does is it elevates your growing area a little bit. And in the aisles is where the water will sink. So I think a lot of our backyard gardeners, as far as the flooding is concerned, will probably be okay because they're not dealing with that planting in flat ground the way that large farmers are. But we are going to be dealing with fungus as soon as this rain stops. So I really implore everybody to start applying their fungicides now on dry days and try to stay ahead of it, whether you're using a chemical or you're using things as simple as milk as a fungicide. Start doing that right about now is the time, because as soon as that sun comes out, that fungus is going to go rampant. And early blight is a tomato fungus that we deal with. Everybody in Cincinnati has seen early blight if you've grown tomatoes, potatoes. So staying ahead of that is really going to be the difference in your season.
513-419-7100 is the number to call. We're not just talking about flooded gardens and farms. We want your general questions about gardening and farming this time of year. So feel free to give us a call at 513-419-7100. We'll go to the phones here in just a moment. I want to put this rain into perspective. WLWT reported that we had 169 days. This was yesterday. So now we're at 170 days so far in the year. And there has been rain or snow on 107 of them, if you count today.
Wow.
That's nearly two-thirds of the year. The days that we've had so far this year have had some type of precipitation. And then we are expecting another 1 to 3 inches of rain over the next couple of days. The Inquirer, citing National Weather Service data, said that a stalled frontal boundary is draped across Ohio and Indiana. That's why we're getting so much rain now. And then low pressure on Wednesday night, so tonight, and then Thursday will bring more storms. And then an extremely moist air mass will continue to be situated across the Ohio Valley with, quote, frequent disturbances moving through, offering chances of showers and storms. And they had a comment from the National Weather Service that said, we would like to say the pattern is going to offer some breaks, but we just don't see much in the way of a respite. So,
Michael, one thing that we actually had on the University of Kentucky, it's called the Agriculture Weather Service, and there's an app, actually. It's called MesoNet, and you can track different disease and insect patterns based on weather patterns. And one, which is abiotic, meaning not, symptomatic from disease or insect, but there is hail damage. So I just want to address that. There has been some hail damage, which leaves holes or tears in plant material. And I just want to be the listeners to be cautious about that. Just because you see holes doesn't mean you need to go out and start spraying or that you can't eat it because there's bugs on it. So just know that when you see a hole, just properly get it identified and just be aware, especially with all these storms and possible hail, that some areas did have hail damage a week or so ago. So yeah, just be mindful of that.
We got a call from Tim basically asking whether this is the new normal. And if it is, do we need to adapt our growing methods?
Well, I mean, last year we got rain in June, which we typically don't, but then it dried out massively. And I know last year a lot of tomato farmers really struggled because we got rain at what we as farmers call the wrong time. It's hard to say with just 1 year. It would just be anecdotal. I sure hope it's not the new norm. And as far as adapting goes, I think on small scales, I think really paying attention to building your rows that you're growing on up and leaving, sunken alleyways in between your growing rows is really going to help. You can do things like install drainage tile in your farm so it can, the water percolates down and then it's moved through a tube out. So there are some long-term solutions, but I wouldn't jump to that quite yet. If this happens multiple years in a row, then we'll kind of cross that bridge.
But I think there's always ways that you can adapt practices for both environmental and sustainable. So, for example, we were speaking previously before the show is, soil erosion. So how can you, with the rain and movement of your soil, well, making sure that plan and plant for, cover cropping or making sure that your soil is never bare. So I think that is one thing that you can adapt into your management plan. And also, just choosing the right plant for the right sites and understanding resistance. So if you have tomatoes, you know, with all this rain, we've been talking about blight, maybe doing a little homework and getting some resistant varieties. So that is adapting to just our environment as a whole and also implementing other practices. And also be mindful, we had installed irrigation at our educational gardens. And for the last 3 years for our lawn, we have not had to turn it on. So just making sure that you adapt to what Mother Nature provides to you and, you know, turn off those irrigation heads. Yes. And, you know, what drives me crazy is when at 2 o'clock in the afternoon it's raining, and you see these irrigation heads going on. I mean, so just be mindful of that and adapt to what Mother Nature gives us.
But what is so unusual about what's happening right now, not just from a weather standpoint in terms of the current forecast, but what is it usually like a couple days before summer around here for those of you with green thumbs?
It's hot and muggy. And that's the rain aside, it's the byproduct of no sunlight and no heat. We've planted all of our heat-loving plants. Sweet potatoes, just they're not dying, but they're not doing anything. They love the heat. They thrive in the heat. Same with tomatoes. All of our Solanaceae crops. And again, they're just kind of hanging out, not doing a whole lot. So it's really just the lack of sunlight and the lack of heat that's really been the struggle. The water we can, you know, mitigate and manage the best we can, but that's really been the tough part for us.
And also one other thing is, you know, even though we had what, like 30 minutes of sunlight before coming to the show today, and yes, I was outside collecting that vitamin D from the sun, but even though you see all those weeds and you're like, oh, I should get my gardening tool out and put my working boots on and get out in that garden and stomp around, but just be mindful that you're creating worse problems by doing that. You know, you're creating soil compaction. So just, you know, it is nice to, you know, it's easier to pull out those weeds, but again, just be mindful you're creating compaction, which long-term is not beneficial.
So for the people who are looking out their window or door now and thinking, I just want to get out there and tend to this, are there any action steps that they should be taking, even though the forecast is still rather gloomy and wet?
So I am treating all of my plants that are susceptible to funguses. I'm treating them currently.
Even in the wetness.
Yeah, even in the wetness, because the fungus can still grow that it's wet. So like I mentioned earlier, milk is a great starting off point. I know that sounds weird to apply milk, but it has a pH that the fungus can't grow on. And if that doesn't work, you can switch to a 1 teaspoon per gallon of sodium bicarbonate, which is baking soda. We all have it, per gallon of water, and spray that, treat that plant. Again, it just changes the surface pH and doesn't allow those fungal spores to grow. So you have to reapply after rains, but again, I think treating them now goes a long way.
And fungal issues are, it's not a one stop, so you have to apply.
Yeah, keep applying.
Keep applying.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. What impact is all this wet weather having on local growing conditions? And how's your garden or urban farm holding up, not just on rainy days like this, but in general? What are you thinking about out there in the field? Join our conversation with Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles and Turner Farm Community Garden Manager Joshua Jones. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. Let's check out some of the callers. We'll start with Jill. Hi, Jill. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I was wondering if they had any advice on weeds. My garden seems to be, like I said, doing okay. Nothing's going crazy, except for my weeds. They're growing like crazy. Give me advice.
All right. Well, hang up and let the panel answer, Jill. Good luck with those weeds.
So, as I mentioned before, Jill, I know it's tempting, but try to avoid getting out into the area now. Now, if you have raised beds that you can lean over and kind of pull those out, but just reduce any type of foot traffic or mechanical use. I would not use any type of chemical use at this time, organic or synthetic, because of any leaching or drift. And it, with all these random downpours, it wouldn't dry. And that's what really needs to happen. It needs to dry on the foliage. So really hand picking Josh?
Mulching.
Mulching.
So if you do have to get out there, and like she said, try not to be stepping in your growing area. If you're using raised beds, then you shouldn't have to worry about that too much. But when you do pull the weed, anticipate this rain continuing and mulch very heavily, I say at least 3 inches. And that way you will be keeping the weeds down. They won't be able to photosynthesize, so they won't compete with your plants.
And newspaper is great too. You know, 3 or 4 layers of newspaper underneath your mulch.
Old leaves, straw, yep. All these things can be used for mulches. I don't recommend using hardwood mulch in your vegetable growing area. But the leaves, straw, and with a newspaper layer underneath works great.
And the soil is a great soil bank, a seed bank, sorry. And so every time you turn that soil and
it rains,
you're just going to, you know, so just be mindful of that. Don't feel like you have to turn that soil over. Just really, you know, again, if you have a raised bed, just hand pick those up, not turning the soil over.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join the conversation. Next up is Dale. Hi, Dale. What's your question or comment?
Well, earlier you mentioned milk. What kind of milk? And you just put that in a sprayer?
Yes. So you want to mix it with water. I actually use powdered milk because it stays, in my shed much longer than liquid milk. So I put a cup of powdered milk in a gallon of water. And, yeah, just through a regular pump sprayer. I know it's difficult to get the undersides of the leaves, but you're not going to get 100% of the underside of the leaves, but pay attention to them and try to get them on the underside of the leaves too, because that's often where the fungal spores will actually be.
There you go, Dale.
Will regular milk work?
Regular milk is fine, and I would cut that with water as well. So
it's just expensive.
It's more expensive, and it doesn't stay around as long as I would like it to. But yes, regular milk, half and half, is great.
There you go, Dale. Thanks so much for the call. 513-419-7100. Next in line is Brandon. Hi, Brandon. What's your question or comment?
Hi. How are you doing this afternoon?
We're doing great. How are you?
Oh, you know, just living a dream.
Glad to hear
so
it, Brandon.
So anyway, I have a general question. This is more for Irish later on Science Friday, but I figured I'd ask you guys since we're on a subject. So with all the dew and the moisture in the atmosphere during the summer, I was wondering if there's a way that they could lower the dew point artificially. Two reasons for this. One, to make the air mass more comfortable. And two, to provide unlimited supply of drinking water for our community and anybody who needs it.
Okay, Brandon, we'll hang up and see if our panel can address some sort of artificial lowering of the dew point. Thanks so much for the call. So you guys heard that?
So I always feel like trying to manipulate large scale Mother Nature systems, it's a race to the bottom. And if you do that, you're probably going to be negatively affecting something else. We just have to work around Mother Nature. I don't think we can necessarily fix Mother Nature to work in our favor on that large of a scale. So I wouldn't feel comfortable really answering that question, per se.
What about powdered milk?
Powdered milk's
I'm
great.
I'm just kidding. 513-419-7100 is the number. Elizabeth is up next. Hi, Elizabeth. What's your question or comment?
Yes, my rose bush is dying, and it has holes in the leaves. I don't know if something's eating it, and there are no flowers on it. And no red leaves. You know, sometimes if there's red leaves on it, it's still healthy and will blossom. But I just don't know if there's anything I should apply to it or.
Okay, so she's got some holes in the rose bush.
Yeah, so roses are high maintenance plants. I just want to throw that out there. Even these knockout roses that were supposed to be these, you know, kind of, I guess, free maintenance type plants. Well, sorry, that's not correct. So any type of roses, especially your hybrid teas or your grandifloras, they are very susceptible to two insects, the sawfly and the rose slug. And they will do some eating around. Now, if you have more of that mosaic stained glass look to the foliage, that is the sawfly. And if you have more of a chewing circular pattern in the foliage that is the rose slug. So you can find a pesticide, an insecticide for that, and it will most times be labeled for roses. I will caution you, there are products that have a 3-in-1, for fertilizer, pesticide, and fungicide. I would steer away from that because they kind of aggravate each other, especially the fertilizer and the nitrogen. It's a salt, and so it can further irritate the fungal issue going on. And then you may now see, as we've been talking about fungal spores, you may see black spot, and it is a black spot on the top of the foliage, and it can over time turn the foliage red, and then of course brown, and then of course death. So as we've been mentioning with edible plants, just with ornamentals, when you see fungal issues, you have to spray regularly every 7 to 10 days, seven when your threshold is really high. So just be mindful of that. But you can buy rose specified chemicals, but avoid using any three-way with a fertilizer.
There you go, Elizabeth. We appreciate so much the call. We'll get back to the phone line momentarily. The number to call is 513-419-7100 if you'd like to weigh in on our conversation today. We did get some emails, because you can also email talk@wvxu.org. We've got a question about tomato plants. What do you do to protect them from disease?
So I have basically everything I do for my tomatoes. I do a tomatoes class, and the whole time all I'm doing is really protecting them against disease. So early blight's the common one around here. They're pretty much fungal, soil-based fungal diseases. So creating a barrier between your plant and your soil is hugely beneficial. That goes 90% of the way. So as soon as I put my tomatoes in, I do a really heavy mulch. I've been using a straw flake method, where I take a flake of straw, which is 3 to 4 inches, and literally surround the stem of my plant with that thick straw flake. Raising the bottom leaves off of the ground, so pruning the bottom leaves off as quickly as you can, because what happens is the rain hits the soil, it splashes up on the bottom leaves, and that creates that fungus to leaf contact. So the pruning of those leaves really helps. And then again, treating with some sort of fungicide, whether you're going to use the milk or the chemical route, treating them early and often, like Sarah said, every 5 to 7 days is not too much. And that really goes a really, really long way into keeping the health and the longevity of your tomatoes going.
Well, what's a flake of straw?
If you open up a straw bale, it naturally comes off in these kind of thick chunks. Don't break the straw up. Leave it in that thick 3-inch chunk and set it down and mulch your plant that way. That way there's no possibility for any soil to kind of bounce up through that straw.
And also airflow is really important. Yes. Yeah, and so making sure that you trellis or stake your tomatoes as well to allow good airflow and light penetration. So I kind of get geeky here, but there's a disease triangle for, you know, each disease. And when you remove part of that triangle, that habitat, therefore the disease will not flourish. So if you create high humidity and it's even better for when you're trying to put a fungicide out, it gives you better contact as well. So spacing, trellising, pruning, thinning, allowing more air and light penetration will reduce that as well.
And spacing is key. A lot of people will, you know, put tomato plants separated by a foot, which is really, really close together. I recommend, especially in our area, at least 3 foot in between your tomatoes. You're not going to have as many tomato plants, but they will live longer and produce the same amount as more plants would. And then I know that we all want to be out pruning our tomatoes right now because it is that time of the year. Mm-hmm. Do not prune your tomatoes. Sit on your hands. I've been doing it for 2 weeks now. Because every plant you touch, if it does have a fungus, the next plant you touch will then have that fungus, and you're just going to spread it throughout all of your plants very, very rapidly. So I know it's tough not to prune right now because that's the time of the year that we should be doing this. Just hang on until your plants dry off.
We got a call from Charlie about fungicides, and he was intrigued by your milk recommendation. And I think we've covered that. But his other half was, is hydrogen peroxide good to use for DIY fungicide?
I've never heard of.
I have heard of it being used. I have not used it myself, and I'm sure it would be some greatly diluted formula, which I don't have. I wouldn't feel comfortable recommending that just because I haven't used it, and I'm not familiar with the dilution.
Yeah. So the University of Kentucky and the land-grant universities, we are research-based. So, you know, even using Dawn liquid soaps or our home remedies, you know, they are for taking grease off of our pots and pans. They are labeled for that. Yes, there are horticultural soaps that are labeled for plants and that they're not going to take away the top layers of the foliage. So just be very mindful. Yes, we may have some of these home remedies or we can Google those, but it's called phototoxicity. So you can actually do more damage than good to plants and even using organic labeled chemicals as well. So always follow the label, and mothballs always comes up. I know this is kind of going off, but some individuals think that's a deterrent, and really it is very toxic to plants, and it's not labeled, so just be mindful.
And always use a test plant. Treat one plant before you treat your entire garden. Wait 24 to 36 hours and see what happens with that plant before you're using some of these home remedies.
Yeah.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. Laura is on the line. Hi, Laura. What's your question or comment? Hi, Laura. Are you there? Okay, we'll put her back on hold and see if we can reconnect with her. We'll move over to, forgive me, I'm not sure how to pronounce your name. Is it Michin? Michin?
Yes.
Michin.
Hi,
Michin.
Thank you for taking my call, and sorry I took the show after it started, but I have a question. My yard is infested with weeds, and I don't want to use the bad Roundup, sorry for naming it, but I would like some advice to use natural ingredients, if I could say so, to get rid of all these invasion. Thank you.
Michin, thank you so much for the call. We'll hang up and let the gang answer that. Organic remedies for the weeds wants to avoid using products like Roundup.
So we've been talking about ornamentals and vegetables, but if you don't mind, I'm going to maybe go to the lawn section for right now. And I've been seeing a lot of our summer annuals starting to come up and are flourishing just like our grass because we haven't been able to cut our grass. So that is one way to remedy that is once we start cutting our grass, you know, making sure that you cut at a 3 to 3.5 inch mow height and cut off any of those seed heads. Yes, there are some organic and synthetic approaches for that. I'm not sure what she meant by weed control because there's different types of landscapes that, in which we can provide management recommendations, but that's lawn. Joshua, you want to go on?
Lawn is definitely not my expertise as a person with lawn, with violet and dandelion and everything else in it. I am going to start the method of pulling and putting down grass seed. And the grass seed basically can help out-compete those weeds. Mm-hmm. It's a long, laborious process. But if you're committed to not using chemicals, that is one surefire way is to pull those weeds by hand and immediately seed it with grass seed and then put some straw on that, which will protect your grass seed and enable it to germinate well.
And the University, oh, sorry.
That's okay, please.
Michael. The University of Kentucky, of course, has publications, and we have a wonderful calendar of when, for lawn care, for example, of when you apply certain things in seeding. And you never want bare spots. You never want bare soil because that's just a spot for weed seeds to flourish. So just making sure that if you need any help, just reach out to the Extension office, it be your lawn or your orchard or your vegetable garden. We have great recommendations for weed control too.
513-419-7100 is the number to call. We're going to try Laura again. Laura, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I sure can. What's your question or comment?
Well, I have some nice looking pumpkin plants, I should say, growing right now. And every year, some little insect seems to get into the vine itself and then cut it off. And then I end up with little pumpkins and not bigger ones. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so yep. That's actually the squash vine borer, very common in this area. So there's a couple different ways that we can tackle it. So planting your pumpkins after June 25th, which is after that vine borer has laid its larvae, what's happening is the adult vine borer lays its larvae in the stem, and that larvae eats out the conductive material, the water transporting material, which is why your pumpkins look like they're not getting water even when we're getting lots of water. So I have seen people actually just cover the bottom 6 inches in aluminum foil, something that simple. The vine borer can't get in there. But my recommendation is to just wait until after June 25th to plant some of those vining squashes, and it works really well. Sometimes I'll plant 10, and then I know a couple of them will be affected. So I'll have a few backups that I seed afterwards, and I'll just pull the affected plants. And then lastly, you can actually cut the stem with a clean X-Acto knife. You can peel it open and pull those larvae out and then cover that section of stem back up with the soil. And you have better than a 50-50 shot of that plant bouncing right back. It's quite incredible to see.
I love that you knew exactly the date that the larva stopped being planted in the vine.
Yeah, that's just...
That's impressive. That's the power of public radio. Thank you for that, Joshua. Laura, thanks for the call so much. We'll go back to the phone lines in just a moment. We understand that our friend David Kester has arrived. He's going to join us. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more about what to do with all this rain, how to tend to your garden, your farm, and get more comments and questions from you. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The monthly gardening show with our experts and your phone calls continues now. We're joined by Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles. Welcome, Sarah.
Hey.
Turner Farm Community Garden Manager Joshua Jones. Welcome, Joshua.
Hello.
And finally, Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. Welcome,
hello.
David.
Thank you.
How's the weather out there?
It's spotty, but there's some areas of rain that I drove through, and then the pavement was dry in places, and then went back and got rain again.
And so you were saying that Boone County was not raining?
When I left, it had a little bit of sunshine even.
And we just had some heavy rain here in downtown Cincinnati.
Yeah,
and how was traffic? People handling it okay?
75 coming in was a little slow. But not, it was moving the whole time, so not blocked or anything.
There you go. Traffic and weather together on the 10s on WVXU. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can also email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter, and we'll get your comments into the show. Let's go back to the phone lines. Britt is on the line. Hi, Britt. What's your question or comment?
Hey, I have a perennial Veronica, one of the really tall ones. Actually have several, but one of them has started this season dying from the base upwards. So it came up, it's 5 feet tall, with beautiful blossom spires at the top, but it's like dying from below. So everything, they like fall over and wilt. Can this plant be saved?
I would first think something's going on with the roots, especially with all this moisture. So when we think from the bottom up, I think the roots underneath the soil. So maybe if you can maybe even lift up the plant, and I know this might sound funny, but kind of examine the roots and seeing if you see any black mushy roots, that's no good. Even smelling the roots, because if you smell them and it is that nasty funk smell, it's starting to biodegrade and that's not good. I wouldn't put anything, especially anything that is systemic, because systemic means that it's absorbed through the roots and it has to take it up. And if it's any type of root issue, it's just going to burn the plant even more. So I would cut off any of the foliage up and seeing if any new, any new growth emerges.
There you go, Britt. Hope that was helpful for you. Let's continue now and go to Michael is up next. Hi, Michael. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call.
Absolutely.
So my for a Mother's Day gift for my wife, my little daughters and myself, one of part of the gift was we purchased her a tree. We got a cherry tree, a snow fountain cherry tree. So planted a few weeks ago, and it seemed to be doing very well. And what I believe is due to all this rain, I'm starting to get a little bit of a yellowing mm-hmm. on the leaves. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if there is anything I can do to help it, and if it may be in danger of dying. We really want to keep it alive. So wanted to see your opinions on it.
Okay, Michael, we'll hang up and let the panel address it. Thank you for the call.
Well, obviously you don't need to water it. So water's not the issue. It may be too much water. And yellowing foliage, cherry trees, even if they're the ornamental type, are going to get some fungal diseases. I would imagine that's what is occurring with it. I don't think there's anything that you can do. I wouldn't even recommend a fungicide on an ornamental cherry. I think you're okay. When it gets critical is if you see a lot of branch dieback. If not only the foliage is falling off or a good percentage of it is falling off, but the branches are dying back as well, then you've got probably something going on in the root system, which could be really just related to transplant shock.
Yeah, and I wouldn't, since it is relatively new into the ground, you never want to fertilize the first growing season of an ornamental tree. So again, transplant shock, fertilizer, no good.
All right, let's continue now with Todd. Hi, Todd. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, hi. I'd like to hear what you have to say about trying to germinate a rose seed or seed. I've got a rose plant that's probably been there, well, it was there when I bought the house, and I don't do a thing to it, and it just makes such nice flowers and everything. I thought I'd try to see if I could get a couple more plants from this one.
Couple things you can do is yes, you can collect the hips, is what they're called, and I believe there's a process that you go through to store those, and then they can be seeded, I believe, in the spring of the year after you have that actual seed has to go through a dormancy period, and there's some procedures to do that. You just need to look up rose seed and see what that is. The other and the more effective way to propagate that plant is to take cuttings from it. And really this fall, August is when we usually do that. You take some of the new growth, you cut it off. And what we always did is we would put that in a rooting hormone, and then we would take a large mason jar or a large glass jar, put it in good soil in a garden in a protected area, put that mason jar over the top of it, and forget about it until spring of next year. And you want to take 5 or 6 of them so that you at least get maybe 2 of them that will go ahead and root and grow, and you'll have plenty of roses.
There you go, Todd. Appreciate the call very much. Next on the line is Donna. Hi, Donna. What's your question or comment?
I have a comment. I don't hear anyone else talking about this, but in between like my asparagus beds in the walkways, I use green grass. I put it down right after it's been mowed, and it pulls even more nitrogen out of the soil and deal, you know, way less weeds.
All right. Well, thanks for the tip, Donna. We appreciate it. So just using some grass cuttings as mulch.
I just caution with that, especially any type, if you get your yard sprayed with any type of chemical, organic or synthetic, because that, especially any Solanaceae crops, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, they're very sensitive to herbicide.
Those grass clippings are best left on the lawn, or as you said, as mulch. Do not bag them up and throw them away.
Yes.
We got a good question from Jennifer. She says that she's not planted any vegetables yet. Is there still time, or is it just not worth trying now?
There's plenty of time.
Absolutely. Get out there.
Yeah, it's, most definitely. I mean, it's prime time to plant some things.
All of us are so far behind this year that, I would – and you know, I hate going to a garden center, or I shouldn't say a garden supply store right now, because a lot of the things that you're buying from transplants have been there since late April, May. If you can find some things that are fresh that they've just brought in, those are the kind of things that you want to go with. If they look like they're yellow, pot bound. Try to avoid those, but by all means, there's plenty of time for tomatoes, peppers, everything, as well as seeding almost everything.
Yeah, and pretty soon we're going to be seeding all of the fall crops. So all of your brassicas, your broccoli, cabbage, carrots, and beets are coming back around. Lots of stuff that you can be planting.
Well, what about those of us who don't have farms or even gardens, but maybe we have a porch and we have, you know, some hanging plants, and so there's some pots involved for mm-hmm. display purposes. What type of attention do we need to be giving those displays in the event of the type of rain experience we're having right now?
Well, I think they're the best off right now. Mm-hmm. Our soil farmers are really struggling. we can't move our soil. We can't move our plants. And Ohio has very clay-based soils, which retain water really, really well. A lot of the potting mixes that we're putting in these pots don't include clay at all, which kind of comes off with another problem. But they are draining soil. They're draining the water very, very well. So I have a feeling that a lot of people growing in pots aren't seeing the same problems that the traditional farmers and gardeners are seeing right now.
Do we need to check for water levels in case it's piling up in there, or are they pretty well designed to handle
that? One of the things that I always put saucers under my pots, and they are filled with water. So you have to drain those out because you want that water moving through them. And as inconvenient as all this is to us and what a pain it is, just remember those poor guys and women who are out there trying to make their livelihoods from, you know, being involved in this business. Really tough this year.
Mm-hmm. And be sure that if you are using pots, and this goes for rainy season or not, always make sure those pots have drainage holes. I don't know why they still have pots without drainage holes on the market, but they do. If you don't have drainage holes, do your best to either transplant them into different pots or put a hole in that pot to allow drainage to happen.
Back to the phones. We have George on the line. Hi, George. What's your question or comment?
Thanks. My question is that my backyard is a low spot, so that takes in a lot of water from surrounding houses. And I have a lot of horsetail and sedge weed growing in and amongst the serviceberry trees and other plants. And I just want to try to get rid of it and don't know how.
All right, George, we'll hang up and let the panel address. He says he's got a lot of horsetail and sedge growing in a low spot in his backyard.
Well, first, I think of creating a rain garden. So just taking that natural ecosystem there and adapting other plants that are water loving. So there are some ornamentals. There's other grasses. Serviceberry is great. It's one of my favorite fruit trees. So you can harvest. They're wonderful.
Okay, we got an email from George. He wants to know how to get rid of Asian jumping worms. Yes, Asian jumping worms. All right.
Awkward silence. Stumped.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the common name of Asian jumping worms.
I gotta look that one up.
I mean, there is...
Do you think he's just trolling us and wanted me to say that on the air?
Yeah, I think so.
That up?
Now, there's the Japanese beetle, of course, that will be coming out.
Do they do any jumping?
Flying.
They fly. Okay.
So...
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that.
I understand from our producer, Pete, that this may be a new invasive species, the Asian jumping worm. So, look, maybe we'll do a little Googling and get to that in the final minute or so as we start to approach that. But... in any event, this rain is going to end at some point, right? We're going to have the sun again. Summer starts on Friday. We're just a couple days away from that. So we're already midway through June, July, just around the corner. Summer heat will be here in full force. I saw a meme that described summer in Cincinnati as hell's front porch. I think that's a fair description, actually. So as we prepare for this part of the summer, and let's consider typical summer conditions if they should emerge on the other side of this deluge. What are some of the tasks we should be checking off on our to-do list in the upcoming weeks as we turn to summer?
Well, this year you better start looking for diseases out there. We've obviously going to have some fungal diseases that we haven't seen back for a while. And we're also fertility management. I think in any of our crops, vegetables, things like that, you probably, all this rain has leached a tremendous amount of the nutrients out. And so you may need to be doing a little bit more fertilizing. And, you know, what I love about the weather here is we always talk about averages. And, you know, this year, believe it or not, could end up being an average year as far as precipitation. But it doesn't tell you the whole story of how much rain we got in April, May, June, July. And, you know, it could turn off dry and be dry the rest of the year. And then we're back in another situation.
It could all balance out.
And, you know, I talk to most farmers in the fruit and vegetable industry, and they would much rather have a dry year than a wet year.
Most definitely.
They can irrigate in a dry year, but they can't do anything about getting into the fields when it's wet.
And I tell everybody, if I could cover my ground with a clear roof right now, I would definitely do that. And to add to what Dave said, mulching is a great task to be doing right now because these rains are going to stop. And when they do stop, you know, mulching keeps the water there a little bit longer, and it prevents things like cracking on tomatoes. It prevents some of the blossom end rot problems that we see. Trellising is another really important thing, getting things off of the ground. And again, that helps mitigate those fungal diseases that we're inevitably going to see with all this rain. So those are two great things that you can be doing right now and on the other side of the deluge.
Did you find anything about the Asian jumping worms?
I did.
Okay, tell us what you found on a quick Google search, unverified.
Well, mind you, you know, research-based. So from Illinois State University, they've come in Illinois, of course. I was trying to get in our area. I didn't see anything from the Ohio State University or Kentucky. But they've been spotted in 2015 in northern Illinois, in 2016 in southern Illinois. They're called crazy worms, Alabama jumpers, and snake worms. Of course, they're doing the same thing, you know, consumer of organic material. They can improve our, you know, soil quality. I don't, you know, they have this smooth, silky, white band on the dorsal end of their body. But, you know, as far to me, the naked eye, I would think that it's just any other worm. I don't feel as if they're a nuisance. But again, this is the first time I've heard of it. So far, it doesn't seem as if it's an invasive species. But if anyone finds anything that is research-based, not someone's opinion, send it my way.
Yeah,
and
that's
going to
be our homework. So for the next monthly gardening show, we'll make sure that revisit this.
That cash cab where you can make a call out? We need a call out to Joe Boggs right now.
Yeah, Joe Boggs would answer this question.
I want to know which parts of Chicago then call it the Asian jumping worm and which one calls it the Alabama jumper. Very quickly here in our final moments together, Community Celebration Day at the Campbell County Extension Office. We've got some details about that. Sarah, at the WVXU.org under the Cincinnati Edition.
Yes, it is a rain or shine event. It's our fourth annual event. I'm very proud of this. Definitely community collaborative efforts, just sharing our story of extension and farmers, local libraries, the police department. So please come out. There's all kinds of free giveaways. We have native plants this year that we're getting rid of.
Well, don't hog up all the time.
Okay,
we'll put the link on there.
Yeah,
Joshua, we know Turner Farms might have something going on soon.
Yeah,
too.
So every Saturday, of course, except for this Saturday, from 10 to 1 p.m., we do what we call a work and learn session where we go through a lot of the topics that we're talking about now, and we do hands-on practice on how to treat for funguses, how to effectively prune, how to effectively travel. Yeah. So that's at 9:56 per cell from 10 to 1 every Saturday.
All right. And what's going on in Boone County, Dave?
Farm tour this weekend, this Saturday.
Ooh. All right. So we've got details on all of it at WVXU.org in the Cincinnati Edition link. Please check it out there. My big thanks to Sarah Stolz, Joshua Jones, and David Kester for coming in and talking to us today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU Archives and details on those events at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.